Welcome to China in Context. I'm Duncan Bartlett. The world is on fire in several places, an expert on diplomacy told me recently. We don't also want to see a blaze in East Asia. The expert was referring to Taiwan, the self-governing island which China claims as its own. Most people in Taiwan want to retain their hard-won democratic system. There's a constant debate about whether Xi Jinping plans an invasion, leading to a major war. Such a conflict would be a grave matter to deal with, following Russia's invasion of Ukraine and the October 2023 attack by Hamas on Israel, which has intensified a long-running conflict around the Middle East. So against this background, why is China staunchly repeating the rhetoric that Taiwan should be controlled by the Communist Party? Isn't it fanning the flames of a conflict that could seriously damage its own economic and diplomatic interests and end the peace and stability which the East Asian region has known for the past 70-something years? Well, joining us on the podcast again this week is Dr. Gerrit van der Wies, a former Dutch diplomat who teaches Taiwan's history and current affairs at George Mason University in the United States of America. Gerrit, welcome back.
Thanks, Duncan, for having me on your program. It's really good to be here.
Now, I sometimes like to start the podcast with provocative comments. There's a piece about Taiwan which I found recently on the website of the Global Times. That's an ultra-nationalist Chinese website which publishes articles in English. I'll read a bit. This is what it says. As for Taiwan, here is the bitter pill for imperialists. There will be reunification. When China was weak in the 19th century, it was attacked by vultures who plucked off strategic regions. However, as China regained its rightful position in the world, former colonialists retreated, giving back the stolen lands. Remember how Portugal returned Macau and the UK returned Hong Kong? Similarly, the US will one day let go of Taiwan. The sooner the Americans accept this inevitability, the better the whole world will be. That's all a quote from Global Times. Well, look, Gerrit, as a historian who's given this a lot of thought, what's your interpretation of such rhetoric?
Well, it is rather ironic that the Global Times refers to imperialists here as the Manchu Empire itself, which governed China at the time, was considered an imperialist slash colonialist regime, not only by the inhabitants of Taiwan, but also by the people of China. So it's a bit of the pot and the kettle calling each other black here. In the 19th century, there was indeed a move by countries like Britain, France, and Germany to gain a foothold along the Chinese coast to extend trade. But Portugal had been in Macau with the approval of the Chinese emperors since the 16th century. And Taiwan was, of course, a Japanese colony from 1895 until 1945, and was then occupied by the Chinese nationalists of Chiang Kai-shek. But it was never an American colony, as the Global Times is trying to imply here. It did, under the American umbrella, become a very vibrant democracy in the 1990s. And that is what China doesn't like very much, as it is a shining example of freedom right on China's doorstep.
Oh, it would be very interesting if the Global Times turned to you for an article on this topic, but I don't think they will.
I doubt they will.
So look, why is China apparently ratcheting up tensions at this point in time? Can you elaborate on its motivation? I mean, isn't it damaging its own diplomatic and economic interests and the peace and stability in the region at a time when we know that the growth rate of the Chinese economy has slowed quite dramatically and investor confidence in China is very low at the moment?
Well, there are basically three reasons for Beijing's belligerence at this time. First is the one I just mentioned, that within a relatively short period of time, Taiwan has transformed itself from a rather ugly Chinese dictatorship under Chiang Kai-shek to a free democracy now. And having such a shining democracy at China's doorstep, even holding presidential elections recently, that is very inconvenient for Beijing, as it might give the people in China itself the idea that democracy is also for them. And secondly, in the West, we had hoped that by engaging China, it would develop into a more free and open society, which would play a constructive role in the international family of nations. And actually, the opposite has happened. It has developed into a major economic powerhouse, but has, under Xi Jinping, become much more repressive. And it wants to undermine the current liberal international order and rebuild it into its own image.
Well, let's talk about what the US and Europe are doing to push back. First, let's consider the situation in Washington, where you're now based. The Senate's passed a package of financial aid for Taiwan and US allies in the Indo-Pacific. However, I thought that the process through which it was agreed was rather strange, because the bill linked the money for Asia with financial support for Israel and Ukraine. So can you help us to understand why these three distinctly different issues were all bundled together?
Well, yes, that is the art of the package deal, which it's quite common in the US Congress and elsewhere, I presume. In this case, the major package was the military support for Ukraine, but because by itself that might not pass, because it was opposed by the right flank of the Republican Party, which wanted to link it to funding of the US-Mexico border. And because of that, the Israel and Taiwan packages were added in order to gain support among the fence sitters. And this worked actually very well in the Senate, but the package is still up in the air in the House.
Well, can I express my own opinion based on a few conversations I've had about Taiwan? I can see that it wants an international coalition of partners to support it and send credible warning signals to China. However, I think it's understandable that some Taiwanese people worry about America. What their concern seems to be is that belligerent rhetoric from the US may undercut efforts to preserve peace and stability in the Taiwan Strait. Now, you have much more experience in diplomacy than I do. How do you read the situation?
Well, I think the Biden administration has actually done quite an excellent job in developing an array of political, economic, and military measures and signals to China to stand down in its threats and intimidations against Taiwan. And it has also done a good job in pulling together a broad coalition of alliances with countries in Europe, with Japan, Korea, Australia, and New Zealand, coordinating and cooperating on diplomatic, economic, and security efforts to push back against the PRC's aggressive behavior. This belligerent US rhetoric that you are referring to comes from a small but vocal segment on the extreme right side of the Republican spectrum. They are basically using the Taiwan issue as a means to beat China over the head, and that is not helpful. Of course, we need to push back hard against China's aggression, but it is essential to look at Taiwan, as I always say, in its own right and in its own light, and not perpetually treat it as a pawn in the relations with China.
Well, thank you. That's helpful, Gerrit. And you've reminded me that there's a broad spectrum of voices on the Taiwanese issue and indeed on China issues and international relations in general in the US. It strikes me that for many countries, there's a tension between their desire to balance their support for Taiwan with other national interests. So they want to promise credible deterrence against the Chinese invasion of the island. But, you know, many countries, they also have deep trade links with China. They've become dependent on China, actually, for a wide range of products. What's the best way to keep the peace without wrecking the economy?
Yes, over the past two decades, we have become overly dependent on China as the manufacturer of the world, to the detriment of our own industries, which were wiped out and swept away by the onslaught of massive production of cheap products from China. Even in the all-important renewable energy sector, we see that production of solar panels and windmills is now totally dominated by China. And at the same time, a number of industries, such as the car manufacturing industry in Germany, have become totally dependent on China for its transition to electric vehicles. And this dependency is now colliding with the desire to push back against Chinese repressive behavior domestically in Xinjiang and Hong Kong, and its aggressive behavior against Taiwan. And I think we need to realize that many of these dependencies are two-way, that China is also dependent on us as a market and thus for its economy as well-being. We have to be more willing to use trade as a tool in pressuring China, on the one hand, to stop its repressiveness internally and its aggressive behavior externally. And also, we need to use these pressures to make sure it abides by the basic standards of the rules-based international order.
Well, lastly, I feel obliged to finish our conversation with a question about Donald Trump. There's a vocal and influential minority in the United States that advocates for a return to greater isolationism. There are also people in America who say that the US could use Taiwan as useful leverage in negotiations with China. Mr. Trump is the author of The Art of the Deal. Do you think he's up for making a deal with China over Taiwan?
Well, it is indeed incredibly difficult to gauge Mr. Trump. He has been very erratic on many issues and is certainly an isolationist when it comes to Europe and the Middle East. On Taiwan, he has been rather wishy-washy, recently repeating that he wouldn't say what he would do if China would attack Taiwan. And is actually in contrast to President Biden, who over the past years clearly and unequivocally stated four times in a row that he would defend Taiwan. But I think among Trump's power base, there is still a very strong support for Taiwan. Partially, of course, for the reason you mentioned, that they want to use it as a stick to beat China over the head. But overall, support for Taiwan is still one of the few very bipartisan issues on which both sides of the political spectrum here in Washington can agree. The mainstream of both the Democratic and Republican Party see the existence of a free and democratic Taiwan as an essential element for peace and stability in the Far East and as crucial to a prosperous world economy, both because of the microchip factor that we mentioned earlier and the fact that some 50% of world trade flows through the Taiwan Strait. So these are key facts that should keep Mr. Trump on the right track, and that would promise perhaps some stability even if Mr. Trump is elected.
Well, thank you, Gerrit, for that fascinating interview. That was Dr. Gerrit van der Wiese, currently teaching at George Mason University in the United States. This podcast is produced by the SOAS China Institute, part of the University of London. And you can find out more about our courses and research at soas.ac.uk. But for now, that's all from us here at the China in Context podcast team.